Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome back, everybody. It's time once again for Plain Politics, this partnership between the Star Tribune Editorial Board and WCCO Radio, along with John Rash and DJ Tice from the Star Tribune. Shad Hartman here. John, why don't we start with the news of the last 48 hours or so. The leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, to China. There were rumors about it. There was speculation. Now we have confirmation. And we have these reports from the president's tweets. We have these reports from Chinese media that Kim Jong-un is willing to talk about the denuclearization from his side. Okay. What sort of credibility do we give this at this point? And then twofold, does the president deserve credit for his bellicose, for his strong words, if a summit potentially is taking place and the North Korean leader is talking in this manner?
Well, you give much more credibility to these reports if they're coming from official Chinese media, because they have so much at stake, including their reputation with the president in very challenging times regarding a potential trade war. And it's often a misnomer that some people think that the alliance between North Korea and China is ironclad. There are challenges between the two nations as well, and very clearly Beijing does not want Pyongyang to get into any kind of confrontation, be it a conventional one or, heaven forbid, a nuclear one with the South and with eventually, of course, the United States here. So as far as Beijing is concerned, they would be fine and would encourage denuclearization to some capacity or some advanced inspection regime that freezes the North's nuclear and ballistic missiles program at this point. So it's quite significant that Kim Jong-un went to China for his first trip as a foreign leader, as a leader of his country to a foreign nation to meet with his Chinese interlocutors there. And I think certainly from President Trump's perspective, one of the reasons that Kim Jong-un is willing to engage in this dialogue is the threat emanating from the United States and the bellicose rhetoric, including the so-called bloody nose strategy, which was a strike which was to get their attention. Now, the challenge with that, of course, is that a bloody nose can be misinterpreted as a full-fledged attack, and it can quickly spiral into violence that is incredibly difficult to contain, and that's the biggest fear of Secretary Mattis. And finally, quickly, I just got back from Japan, and I think that, you know, one of the challenges of this upcoming summit is that the president needs to get on the same page with his South Korean and Japanese allies. Certainly, it seems to be the closer with South Korea, especially with them getting closer on a trade deal. But Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was blindsided with the news of the impending summit, and it's very important that there isn't any daylight between Tokyo, Seoul, and Washington on this.
What do you think, DJ?
Well, you know, people talk about a fog of war, and there's certainly a fog of diplomacy as well. And we are kind of deep into that here, I think, so we need to be careful in interpreting exactly what's going on. Yeah. You know, the North Koreans have wanted the prestige of face-to-face meetings, one-on-one meetings with the United States for a long time. So they have other motives, you know, for wanting that without necessarily being sincere about a willingness to really back away from their nuclear program. You know, that said, there seems to be something real happening here with the Chinese involved. And I think it's difficult to dispute that, surprising as it is to many, President Trump's kind of schoolyard taunting and tough talk it seems to have produced results where in more decorous diplomacy for decades has not.
Let's talk about, and I'll start with you, DJ, two of the bigger issues, political issues from the weekend. Let's start with the March for Our Lives. hundreds of thousands of marchers in Washington, D.C., 20-some thousand in St. Paul. There was a partnership between WCC Radio and the Star Tribune last week with students talking about what they think in this town. Just yesterday, we had John Paul Stevens, the former Supreme Court Justice, calling for the repeal of the Second Amendment. If we turn the calendar ahead 1 year from today, are we going to see a sizable legislative change, whether it's at the state level or the federal level, regarding gun legislation?
Well, I don't know what percentage there is for me in making such a prediction. But if forced to do so, I think it will be well less than the most ardent advocates of change hope for. I think we've seen this sense of a turning point, of a change of tide on the issue many times before, when particularly shocking tragedies have occurred. Now, this does feel different. The youth movement is very impressive. The outpouring of these marchers and the young people that we had on our page in the roundtable over the weekend, the eloquence and passion of the young people, it really has become a galvanizing issue, I think, for them as a generation and an identity builder. As much as anything else. And who knows? Nothing lasts forever. And the tendency for the gun rights forces to beat back attempts at reform may not last forever either. Whether this is the change, I think the experience of the past tells us to be cautious about expecting any given turning point to be the last one. On Stevens, I must say I find it a little peculiar that a movement, you know, if we have a gun control movement of which he's a part, you know, that can't seem to pass even very modest legislation.
This isn't modest.
It is going to amend the Constitution.
There's no chance.
And get 3/4 of the states to ratify that. They couldn't get Minnesota to ratify it.
No.
So what state are they going to start with? You know, California, I suppose, but they might have a tussle out there. I think that's pie in the sky, and I don't think it's particularly helpful for the cause of change.
I think that's a key point.
Because it says very clearly to gun rights supporters that they can't trust the other side to be satisfied with, quote, common sense reform, that what they want is repeal the Second Amendment and take your guns.
John, I think that's an enormous point, and I heard that from friends of mine who have fears of that. I read that all over the place yesterday, and I don't doubt the former justice's opinion, but when the folks who are motivated by this weekend are motivated post-Florida, and they're talking about incremental, realistic change, this isn't incremental, and this isn't realistic. So what do you think? A year from now, are we going to see sizable changes with our gun laws in this country?
I do not, and I think that there's probably a higher chance that we'll see some significant shifts in terms of who is in office a year from now. In terms of 1 year from now, you'll have a new Congress who takes place, as well as a new legislative session. And what will be quite compelling is to see what effect, as DJ so rightly describes, this galvanizing generational moment has at the ballot box. Right on the eve of these marches, the Pew Research Center came out with their latest poll about where people identify on the political spectrum, either as a Republican or lean Republican, Democrat or lean Democrat. And quite strikingly, with millennial women, there was a 70-23 percentage point differentiation between whether they leaned or were Democrats versus leaned or were Republicans. And so this is something that is really being imprinted on the younger people in terms of the importance of this issue to their generation. And if indeed they show up at much higher numbers at the ballot box because of it, you could get some shifts in terms of what happens. I think you'll get some small legislative moves, very incremental as mentioned here, but nothing that will probably keep this issue from being prominent for many voters next year.
Stormy Daniels and her attorney on 60 Minutes, they get their biggest number, 60 Minutes, in a decade. Wednesday morning, Stormy Daniels' attorney comes out saying, I want to depose the president. John, this is a man in Donald Trump who's bragged about his affairs, bragged about sleeping with women. For the folks who look from afar and say, why should I care about this? Why is this relevant? What do you say?
Well, certainly those people will make their own judgments regarding the president's personal behavior. They have with past presidents and made those kind of judgments as well. But one of the key dynamics is that she was paid off to keep her silence.
Mm-hmm.
And the issues surrounding that payment is one that some people say could put them once again in the crosshairs, not just of controversy, but perhaps of illegality in terms of how
election
that went
laws.
Down, election laws, exactly. And so, that's something to watch in this. I think what's been quite striking is this is one of the very few times that someone has taken President Trump on directly, and he's been relatively silent, especially regarding saying anything via Twitter. And so while he has denied the allegations from, that aired on 60 Minutes and beforehand, he certainly hasn't struck back the same way that he does in so many other cases. So, that really tells me that perhaps they're quite concerned about the impact on his approval rating and, again, potentially the legality of the payoff here.
It's certainly treacherous ground for him. I suspect that he would fight the deposition. And I suspect he would lose because we have very clear precedent that a president is not excused from that level of accountability for conduct, not related to official duties in the Bill Clinton, Paula Jones case. And, of course, it was things he said in the deposition that produced the whole impeachment.
Correct.
Produced the perjury charge and so on. And I imagine, I don't actually know, but I imagine Trump has been deposed a few times.
He has been a number of times.
Maybe gotten some experience as a witness, but it's a difficult situation. I don't know if anybody's been deposed.
Yeah.
I have. It's a very unpleasant experience.
Yes, and you need to keep quiet
right.
and on point. That's normally how President Trump.
You have to keep your head and keep your cool, and it's almost impossible as the hours wear on.
that's the whole point. Let's switch here. And, John, I know you wrote about Cambridge Analytica and Facebook and all that coming out and Facebook trying to defend themselves, and more comes out day by day. They've lost billions in value. Mark Zuckerberg has now admitted some of the mistakes, although I thought some of the newspaper ads on their semi-apology, the Facebook ad was just so small, but he is now saying he will go to Congress. They've rolled out some different privacy changes. What does this mean for Facebook? What does this mean for politics over the next couple of years?
Well, it means that Facebook realizes that they face an extraordinary crisis on their hand. Not just in terms of their involvement in Cambridge Analytica and what has happened, and to some degree, and I expect that they will claim that they were the victims of this and that the data was surreptitiously taken. But when you have such a breach of trust, let alone data, I think that's something that is quite challenging for Facebook, not only in terms of the potential that they will be regulated in some capacity, social media in general, by Congress and maybe signed by the president, but it's a threat to their business model, especially if people delete their Facebook accounts, as many people encouraged in the wake of this. But what I find quite striking is, yes, this is a Facebook scandal, but it's a far bigger one with Cambridge Analytica in terms of what they have done. And anyone who has taken the time to watch the undercover videos of, as I wrote, the over-the-top tactics that Cambridge Analytica used, in terms of taking the social media data, creating extraordinarily divisive campaigns, yes, here in America on behalf of the Trump campaign, but globally, and they boast about this, including and especially in Kenya, in elections that ended up extraordinarily violent with people being killed from that capacity. And so some of the heat has been taken off of them, because I think it's easier for the average person to understand Facebook's connection to this as opposed to this purposefully shadowy group operating out of the UK. But I think that on a global basis, the way that we communicate and thus the way that we campaign and ultimately potentially the way that we govern is in play here. And it's yet another big challenge to democracy worldwide.
I was sitting here trying to remember the last time I was here, we were talking about some other major breach of privacy.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which one. Yeah.
And I said then, and I'll just repeat now, that I continue to wonder whether the whole digital world we have entered is in crisis.
Yep.
Or soon to be, that with the insecurity of one's personal data, financial data, these powers to manipulate political yep. life and communication and masquerade, it just seems to me that it's increasingly out of control, and I don't have any idea how we get it back under some kind of control, or how draconian, policies would have to become to accomplish that.
Do we now have to say, DJ, we've just lost our privacy? We just have that if we enter in this contract through any sort of social media, that this idea that we're going to have what we want buttoned up and people will not have access to it, that if you decide to partake in this, you've lost that commitment.
I'm at the point where, just personally, my own life, I wouldn't do anything online that I wouldn't want the whole world to know about.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say anything. I wouldn't write an email. I wouldn't do any transaction, period, that I wouldn't want everybody to
right.
know about.
That's probably where we're
now,
at.
Now, people aren't that interested in me, no. fortunately, but...
We'll be posting DJ's emails. John, let's talk about someone who's spending some time in the state of Minnesota, the vice president of the United States, Mike Pence. He was in, North Dakota, traveled here, raising money. How powerful is Mike Pence? I mean, we have these conversations over decades, and recently it seemed like the Biden-Obama relationship was important to Biden, and the Biden was really a strong conduit to Congress. Dick Cheney, that's been debated many, many times. President Trump is so verbose. He's so outspoken. He's so counter to Washington. But how important is Mike Pence to all this?
Extraordinarily important, and he continues a long line of powerful vice presidents that began with our own Minnesotans' own Walter Mondale, with
yeah.
President Carter, but back in 1976. And he's powerful from many perspectives. One is that he is one of the very few people within the administration who has never, at least publicly, gotten crosswise with President Trump. President Trump has never tweeted or said anything publicly negative about the vice president. And normally in an administration, you would never expect that to happen. But in this administration, that's quite striking
right.
relative to how he has, treated people within his cabinet and even occasionally people within his family in terms of his perspective on them. He's also very important in that he shores up the social conservative base, which was so important to the
yes.
election of President Trump. And just a few minutes ago, we were talking about Stormy Daniels and that whole issue. And, Vice President Pence is someone who social conservatives look at and they feel he truly not only shares but lives their values. And so he's important. And finally, I would add, there are multiple reports that he was the chief mover behind, the transgender troop issue that mm-hmm. President Trump just recently resurfaced as an example. So on some key issues like that, he's also very important on policy as well.
I think there's a one very important difference between Mike Pence and everybody else in the administration that we don't often think about, but I think is very front and center on the mind of President Trump and Mike Pence, and that is that he cannot be fired. He owns his office on
yeah.
his own authority.
Right. Yeah.
He was elected just like the president was, and so he's there as long as he wants to be within his term of office. That, I think, makes it very difficult for Trump to get on the crosswise
right.
with him. It's a different thing because ultimately Pence, has a right to his office, and that's a difference. But I think otherwise, what John says is right, especially as, one by one, the more accomplished and sort of adult members of the cabinet
gone
disappear and are replaced by the island of misfit toys.
Yeah,
Pence remains a person of some substance and steadiness.
Gentlemen, as always, more topics to get to, but we're out of time. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
DJ and John from the Star Tribune. Chad Hartman here from WCCO Radio. Thank you so much for listening to Playing Politics for this week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.